Okay. First, of course, I want to thank the organizers for putting together, obviously, a very stimulating meeting. Yesterday, of course, was indeed an exciting day, full of discussion about the black hole information paradox. Today, apparently, the theme of the day is a bit different, but I'm extending yesterday's topic, and I'm assuming that people don't get tired from talking about black holes. Indeed, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give my own personal understanding, to some extent, of a number of the things themes that are part of the discussion. In particular, the reconstruction of the interior operators. Nowadays, we might want to call them the operators on the island. In terms of radiation. And that topic, obviously, nowadays, we do understand that that's connected with quantum error correction. This connection wasn't always obvious. Basically, what I'll do today, and all the formulas basically on my slides, are essentially from a paper that I written seven years ago. With one change, the paper 7 years ago was written about sort of black holes before the page time. And in this case, I'm going to be talking about what happens after the page time. And that's, of course, the main new insight and the excitement about the replica wormhole, is that we can get more insight in what's happening after the page time. But essentially, it amounts to just interchanging the role of the interior and the exterior of the black hole. Now, there's another title one could give to my talk, which is this one. Indeed, it's true that a lot of the things that have been discussed, at least in a number of papers, and this list is not exhaustive, there are more people that have written papers that have essentially ideas that implicitly or explicitly make use of some of these things that I'll be discussing today. But the PETS map, in particular, unless you understand completely what it is, then indeed, if you do, then you won't learn too much from my talk. But I think it's actually useful to think about, indeed, how the construction of the interior works in a somewhat more simple-minded language. And indeed, my language, indeed, will be very simple-minded. Essentially, the only thing, computation that I'm going to be doing at some point will be to do weak contractions in a Gaussian matrix model. That's the only thing computation I'll do. But the rest essentially follows from just simple reasoning. There's another sort of tantalizing subtitle I could give, which is just food for thought at the end of the talk, which is the rendezvous on the island. Indeed, would it be possible with the new ideas that we have to actually test the idea of two people, obviously Alice and Bob, meeting on the island? So that's a discussion at the end. So the recent developments have shed, of course, important new light, indeed, on why after the page time, indeed, operators can be expressed as acting on the radiation. The space-time reason for why this is possible is really still the very old one, namely that if you draw something that people call a nice slice, it's not a nice slice at all, namely that the interior of the black hole, the region of the black hole, is exponentially boosted relative to the exterior of the black hole. And that exponentially large boost, indeed, was already indicated as Hooft, who basically already introduced black hole complementarity with the idea that operators outside and inside should actually be expressible in terms of each other. Of course, in those days, it wasn't obvious how to do it, and Hooft has some proposals which I don't think hit the mark, and the recent ideas are more accurate. But the fact that this can really be done is really equivalent to the statement of black hole complementarity. And indeed, long ago, we already were drawing diagrams essentially like this, without the little squares, which you can't see anyway, the islands. But the fact that the exterior has this highly boosted region relative to the interior indeed leads to the phenomenon that any particle that wants to make it to the region in the interior will actually have collided with exponentially large energy with any Hawking particle that reached the exterior. And I remember long ago in lunch discussions, we were drawing exactly these kind of diagrams. And basically, the complementarity principle, which you could even call space-time complementarity because it's a more general statement, than for black holes, that if you take a Cauchy surface and you have space-like separated regions where you have operators that are supported on matter field configurations that propagated back in time will have had this very large collision, basically it was already postulated back then that those have to be, cannot be simultaneously contained in the physical Hilbert space, but they're complementary in the sense that they can actually express in terms of each other. So the recent ideas make this much more explicit and shed a very beautiful new light on it. For my talk, the main insight actually really goes back indeed to this paper by John and by Patrick, that black hole evaporation is really an ergodic process, and it provides a random, and this is the key idea already, a random embedding of the initial state of the formation of a black hole into the Hilbert space of the radiation. And if you think about the statement of scrambling, it's actually confusing. If the radiation is a free field theory, how can free field dynamics be scrambling? The reason why we can do the reconstruction is that the black hole is doing the scrambling for us, and we have to consider the whole evolution of the black hole evaporation, formation and evaporation process in order to give ourselves these random matrices or this random embedding. And this random embedding is the main tool that makes the story possible. The idea that quantum error correction, or the tools of quantum error correction, are useful, indeed, was already sort of implicit in that paper. Then people started thinking about how to do reconstruction using those tools, and those ideas have been around for a while. And indeed, right now, we basically know that you have to introduce something that's nowadays called a code subspace. The code subspace we're going to talk about a little bit more. In my case, it's going to be a rather big space. It essentially is going to be almost all of the states of the black hole, but it needs to only be have an entropy that's a bit less of the than the entropy of the CFT. And actually, it's actually more important that this code subspace has an entropy that's less than the radiation. And then these ideas basically start to play. So let me adopt the basic mechanism, at least the basic model that people have been talking about. Because I mentioned the initial state is kind of important, but I'm not going to specify the initial state. I'm going to specify a large Hilbert space of possible matter configurations. Take any matter configuration that could form a black hole. We're going to model the gravitational dynamics indeed by ADS CFT. And then we're going to wait a long time, and then there's radiation coming out. And then the idea is that indeed this radiation allows you to reconstruct stuff that happens inside. So this should be in the entanglement wedge of the radiation. Now, again, there's unitary time evolution. You start with a matter state, you get an entangled state, and you can write this entangled state in different ways. You can either choose some kind of preferred basis on the radiation, and then call the CFT states psi sub a. This is essentially what Douglas described yesterday. Or you can do the opposite. You can take a basis inside of the CFT, and then you call the state in the radiation that's entangled with it the phi n. Notice that if one of the two spaces is much bigger than the other, that the corresponding dual set of objects is not a complete basis. So indeed, when we go and write down density matrices, these density matrices are not invertible matrices on the Hilbert space. At least in one of the two cases, it's not going to be an invertible matrix. And actually, if you think about the firewall paradox and black hole information paradox, the fact that these matrices are non-invertible is actually one of the issues that leads to tension. But surprisingly, if these are random embeddings, then indeed what happens is that the density matrices actually start looking as if they are invertible because they become essentially diagonal. And that's going to be a theme in the talk. Please interrupt, by the way, if you have questions at this point. So in any case, if this is a random kind of embedding of the initial Hilbert space into the final Hilbert space, then it's possible to reconstruct the interior operators with an accuracy, an exponential accuracy. And the exponential accuracy is given by this particular exponent. So the big element, or at least the big object, would be the radiation after the page time. So this entropy is much bigger than those entropies. And then this is an exponentially small number. And this is the approximate error correction that's going to do the job. No, I'm imagining sort of the page dynamics, where basically I'm accumulating the radiation, maybe up to a small factor because of free energy. But basically, I'm accumulating the radiation that's been emitted by the black hole. So that's what I mean by the radiation.
But so you mean, I think he's right between the coarse grain, right? The fine grain radiation goes back down to zero.
Yeah, yeah, correct. The coarse grain. Thank you. You're right. Indeed, what I'm doing, indeed, is I'm continuing the page curve. That's right. Thank you. Okay, so indeed, basically the fact that this thing works with this particular accuracy, this is going to be my motivation for introducing a code space. Because basically, if this matter Hilbert space gets too big, I might run into trouble, into foul with this inequality. But actually, I have a lot of room to make this initial Hilbert space very big. And the reconstruction actually works state independently as long as this inequality is indeed satisfied. Correct.
Can you repeat the question? The S radiation is the one that keep growing even after page time because more radiation goes out. Is that
correct?
Right? So that means I could even take the S matter to be the entire black hole.
Right. In practice, in the end, if this is going to be the elephant in the room, then this thing is going to be the small entropy, and so there's no obstruction at some point to just do the whole black hole. Indeed, as long as you have the information in there, you still need some extra piece that allows you to embed the Q of T Hilbert space. So that part is still still there. So I'll just go and do the mathematics. So we've been hearing about random matrices, so one of the random matrices you could be talking about is the random Hamiltonians. The random matrix in our story is indeed basically the time evolution operator. But the time evolution operator, again, what it does, it starts with, say, I'm imagining that the CFT starts in the ground state, and my matter is just injecting the quantum information, basically. And then there's a tensor decomposition that I wrote before, where this part here is actually inside of the radiation, and this part is then the CFT basis in the Hilbert space. And again, as I said, the matter state could be arbitrary, but nothing that I'm going to talk about will depend on those numbers alpha. So alpha are the thing that determine the state. And I will not use those alphas. So in that respect, the construction is state independent. The thing that I'm going to make use of are these C's. And the C's are basically coming from the U. And therefore, they're basically microscopically determined. And they're microscopically determined random matrices and a random embedding from the matter Hilbert space into the radiation. And you can draw it like that. Now, in a situation like this, the radiation doesn't literally know the initial state because the initial state is spread out over the CFT and the radiation. But the CFT is the smaller of the two, and in that case, the radiation knows to very high accuracy what the initial state looks like. This is called a noise channel because basically, if I don't have access to the CFT, I have to trace it out, and I get a mixed state on the radiation. Yes.
Sorry, on the previous slide, the pure state would have been, the pure state would have been the matter CFT and radiation, or
This is the pure, this is, I start with the pure state, but I'm not specifying which pure state it is. If you wish, you could also put this thing in a mixed state, if you want.
I got sort of confused on the previous slide, sorry. When the entropies, you have this expression that
this one here.
Matter plus CFT minus radiation.
What I meant by this is indeed sort of just the naive this is the Hawking calculation of the radiation entropy.
So the sum, the union of matter CFT and radiation is not a pure state.
I'm just counting this as the dimension of the Hilbert space that I need in order to capture all the Hawking radiation. That's what I meant by E to the S radiation is the log of the dimension of the Hilbert space that I need to capture all the Hawking radiation.
Can you be a little bit more clear about the difference between the S as the matter and the CFT? I'm not sure what exactly.
Also, for page time, is there still matter? And this inequality is satisfied.
Yeah, so I'm viewing this as my initial state. This is my in state. So what I call by matter is just the initial state that forms the black hole. CFT is the thing that actually does the black hole formation. So the matter is the stuff that before, when it's still a star, the star is collapsing, and the state of the star is going to be in HMAT. And then the graph.
Isn't that part of the CFT?
Yeah. So the first step.
CFT is the remaining black hole, and radiation is the radiation.
But I understand radiation well.
The matter is the state of the CFT.
No, it's being embedded in the same way as that the radiation is being emitted by the CFT, because in all these the recent models, we're imagining a region where you just have the propagating modes. In the same thing, I can have propagating infalling modes that I'm embedding into the CFT through an HKLL embedding, if you want. And then it goes into the CFT and it forms a black hole. Okay?
But you can have all three components at some space like slice.
Correct. So I could do the more general story by also putting the CFT in some general initial state. But it's useful to call this thing the labeling of the initial states.
So and the Hilbert space is the tensor product of CFT and radiation, right?
Correct. That's the final Hilbert space, and the space of initial states is being embedded. So this is my proxy for the space of initial states that I'm allowing.
Herman, can I just ask, in the first boxed equation, it looks like what you have in mind is that initially you just call everything matter, and then later, for example, after the page time, you have
a subdivision into CFT, which is kind of like the black hole and radiation.
Right.
And I think what's confusing some of us is that they all appear together in the second boxed equation. But maybe we can just set S matter to zero there, if we're after black hole formation.
No, this is not done at a given moment in time. So I count the number of initial states, I count the number of the size of the Hilbert space that I need in order to capture all the Hawking radiation.
But then I don't think the equation is right, because all that you care about is the size of the black hole compared to the radiation, right?
No, I think it is. This is a single.
This is the correct bound, and actually I should say indeed this equation appears in Jeff's paper.
That's the right equation.
This equation appears in Jeff's paper.
Like the dimension of the space.
Oh, thank you.
Right. So the thing should be here, because if you let this thing grow, you run indeed into a problem when this number starts approaching one. That happens close to the page transition, at least to some extent. So here's actually the only equation that we're going to be making use of. This is the key equation, is that actually this thing is describing the density matrix on the radiation. No, the density matrix. I always get confused about this thing. Density matrix on the radiation, yes. So basically, the idea is that these C's are random numbers. And if they're random numbers, and you multiply them times their complex conjugate, and you do matrix multiplication, then on the diagonal, you're going to get just positive numbers that are summing up, and you have constructive interference on the diagonal, and you're going to have basically destructive interference on the off-diagonal. Not quite destructive, but at least you're going to not have any positive interference off diagonal. So this equation is going to be the key equation, and indeed this equation holds to the accuracy of the bound that I wrote down in the previous slide. So the correction terms to this thing are indeed given by the difference of those entropies. So written down a little bit more explicitly, and here's then going to be an equation that essentially is the equation that Douglas wrote down yesterday, is that, again, if I write it down now in terms of a basis of states of the initial Hilbert space, then there's a three-index object that labels the initial state and then the decomposition in the CFT and the radiation. And those numbers, again, they're microscopically determined, and they satisfy some decomposition that I can always write like this. But the main statement is, if these are complex random numbers, then these things are exponentially suppressed, and these things are statistically determined, and these are indeed probabilities. And the gravity knows about the diagonal, it doesn't know about the off-diagonal, except when you start taking powers of these objects, then the off-diagonal terms can start playing a role. I could also compute the density matrix on the radiation. Similar formula applies there as well. One of these matrices is not at all invertible. Nonetheless, it looks invertible if you start taking an ensemble average. And indeed, once you take the ensemble average, the off-diagonal terms go away. Right? So you can phase average if you want, or you can ensemble average, and then you only have the diagonal terms. So basically, the rest of the computation, so the next two slides, you can ignore them a little bit. I'm just going to explain why, if you do something that I think is nowadays called, free probability theory, basically where you just do Gaussian contractions between these random matrices, it gives you a very quick way of computing, for example, indeed the Page curve. The actual computation that Page did, it's a slight modification because the computation done in the recent paper by the Stanford group was more intricate. But here is basically a summary of the density matrix of the CFT. You can essentially write it as C times C dagger. The density matrix of the radiation is C dagger C of the radiation is C C dagger. And now I'm going to take basically ensemble averages. And ensemble averages is just doing a Wick contraction. And I can do the Wick contraction between these two guys, or I can do the other Wick contraction in the other order. And in one case, I get one density matrix, in the other case, I get the other one. And then just statistics tells you that if, for example, you have energy conservation, indeed there's some correlation between the energies on both sides, but the dimension of the Hilbert spaces will determine what those coefficients are. These are the Boltzmann weights. And then very quickly, if you want to do, for example, a computation of purity, you just do Wick contractions. That's the diagram, and that's the computation that Douglas and is described in the paper. And it's very easy in that case to actually compute the nth radii entropy. You can actually compute it by counting the number of Wick contractions that you can do with the Gaussian free field, basically, Gaussian matrix field. You do have a large n rule that the Wick contractions cannot intersect. And then trace rho to the n turns out to be given by a sum where these of powers of these probabilities, p and q, where these are known as Najarana numbers. And this sum can be done, and it yields the result that's in Page's original paper. So this is the down-to-earth version, basically, of the computation of the Rainy entropy, just by doing free Gaussian probability theory. So now I'm going to talk about the interior construction. How am I doing with time?
7 minutes.
Okay, we'll see how we go. Okay, are there questions at this point? So the PETS map is makes use of something that's called the noise channel, where indeed you have this unitary evolution where you have entanglement being built up and you trace over one of the Hilbert spaces, so you have only partial information. PETS map is usually written, therefore, indeed as a map or mapping either on density matrices or on operators. But it's quite useful to actually think about it in terms of a stepwise process, where you have an intermediate step, where you do something which indeed a quantum computer may want to do, If the quantum computer indeed is the system that loses some of its purity, you may want to restore the purity of the quantum computer by doing something that's called a recovery. I learned this indeed from the lecture notes of John Presco, that indeed you have this recovery operator that effectively inverts this unitary matrix U, but it only does so with partial information about the state, because this radiation state here is in a mixed state. But basically, the recovery, what it does, it makes use of something that's called the ancilla. It temporarily uses a Hilbert space, which is later going to project out, to basically do the dagger of this operation. And then it, to a high degree of accuracy, it reproduces the matter state. So that's, it's possible to write an operator, and I'll give you the formula for it in a second. Most importantly, what it does, actually, it produces an entanglement swap, meaning that this radiation was entangled with the CFT, and what this thing does, it basically makes sure that all of that entanglement now is in between the CFT and the ancilla CFT. So this thing will now be in a thermal field double state, and it's a unique state, so therefore it has zero quantum information, if you wish. So all the quantum information of this thing now sits there. So that's what it does. And if you want, so here it's in formulas, the same statement that's here in pictures is now here written down in formulas. The R is an operation that acts on this tensor product. And if you compose it with U, you get a state that factorizes like that, where this is the thermal field double. In terms of explicit formulas, first of all, by the way, how do we reconstruct it, indeed? What is it good for? So how do we reconstruct them? Basically, this is the PETS map. The PETS map, what it does, it takes the dagger of the matrix C that I introduced before. So basically, it's just taking the dagger of the matrix. And essentially, it's trying to take the inverse of the matrix C that I had before. But there's some statistical factor that you have to include here, which in the PETS map is written like the inverse to power of the minus 1/2 of the density matrix of the radiation in case you would start with the unit density matrix on the matter-Hilbert space. That's what this thing is. This is the unit matrix on the matter-Hilbert space, and that's the formula for the PETS map. It looks simple. It's actually a little bit more complicated than necessary. Still, because if you make use of essentially the formula that I wrote before, which is very accurate, namely that the C dagger C has this diagonal form, then you can rewrite this PETS map in the following form. Oh, by the way, here it's in figures. Here's the diagram. So basically, this thing can be reconstructed in terms of one swoop, in terms of this operator U. And these are diagrams that indeed have appeared in papers of various authors, including Yoshida and Kitaev, I think, and maybe in other works previously as well. All of this stuff, by the way, is very well known to people in quantum information theory. And indeed, in John's notes, lecture notes from a long time ago, the recovery operator was actually written like this. And it's true that this is very accurately the same as the previous operator that I wrote down, simply by using the statistical properties of the C matrices. Another very useful property is that this 1 over 1 over square root of P is precisely such that these Rn's have a property that if you multiply them, they essentially are diagonal just with unit coefficient. And we're going to make use of this precisely to reconstruct the interior operators. So here's the basic PETS map construction. I can reconstruct operators on the initial state basically by just doing the following. As you do the recovery, you have your initial state back here. I just act on it here, and I unrecover. Basically, I just project these two things back. So that's how I can reconstruct operators on the initial state. One important point, though, is that these are not really the island operators, in my opinion. It's not so obvious that operators acting here on the initial state are actually operators that act on the interior of the black hole. Basically, the interior of the black hole, I would interpret as being described by this, or at least the horizon region of the black hole is described by this Stubblefield double state. And there's another version of the operator, which indeed operators that would be operators that act on this part of the Hilbert space. This is really where the island sits. You write down those operators, but now they actually act non-trivially on the n index of the radiation of the recovery operator, and this is the actual expression for the CFT operators. And if you wish, you can also do the same thing for the HKL operators inside of the CFT, and these are the island operators. In terms of pictures, this was actually the picture we had a long time ago in our paper. This is the doing the recovery, acting with the operator, and unrecovering. And the ancilla, in this case, is a virtual object because basically you're projecting it out again, the ancilla. Okay, for the last 2 minutes, I'll just give, talk a bit briefly about indeed the story where Alice and Bob try to meet. So suppose indeed that we make the ancilla real, as we discussed, after the recovery, the CFTs are in a Stubblefield double state, so they're described by a black hole. And so therefore Bob can say jump in to one of the CFTs, and Alice can decide to jump into the other CFT. And the question is, can they meet? In principle, that seems to work, because essentially once they jump in, Alice and Bob are essentially in the Stubblefield double state, so things should work. If you wish, you can do the HKLL embedding, but it's still the Stubblefield double state. The quantum computer that was doing the magic of the decoding was owned by Uncle Charlie. Alice and Bob have jumped into the black hole, but Charlie is still a bit worried because the black holes continue to evaporate. And this is indeed the story where you form a new island, basically, in the two-sided black hole because the two-sided black hole started in the Stubblefield double state, but since they continue to emit irradiation, it actually factorizes into a mixed state where each of the black holes, at least the CFTs at least, are in just a thermal mixed state. So how can this still have the ER's EPR mechanism? It can have it basically because there's still EPR correlations between the two sides of the radiation. And Charlie is going to use that with his quantum computer to now wait after the phase time and essentially do the same decoding operation. But in this case, something slightly surprising happens actually, is that the recovery indeed is happening on the right, and it's also happening on the left. In this case, it turns out that the ancilla that Charlie needs essentially needs to also be a pair of CFT in the Stubblefield double state. But then after the recovery, it's no longer true that the original CFT, again, is in the Stubblefield double state. What happens is that the Stubblefield double state is now being paired up between the ancilla CFTs and the original CFT. So in pictures, what happens is this. This was your original situation. Alice and Bob jump in. Charlie does the recovery operation, and halfway the recovery operation basically he has done an entanglement swap. So this CFT is now entangled with something else. This CFT, which was initially entangled with that one, is now entangled with an ancilla. That basically purifies the state of Alice and Bob, and suppose that Charlie simply wants to switch Alice and Bob, he can do it at that point, and then he can undo the recovery operation, and then Alice and Bob are switched inside of the island. It's an interesting thought experiment. Of course, it's a thought experiment. It's very hard to do. Charlie is really a super-duper quantum computational scientist, and he can do this. Does it teach us anything about the existence of the interior of the black hole? That's a question. I'll skip the last comment about the operator algebra if you have questions about that. These are my conclusions. The reconstruction of the interior operators in terms of radiation uses that black hole evaporation produces a random embedding of the initial state into the Hilbert space of the radiation. The construction is largely state independent but requires the introduction of a closed subspace. And the closed subspace basically needs to satisfy an appropriate inequality. No ensemble average, by the way, is needed for the reconstruction of the interior operators. Gravity indeed only knows the ensemble average, but gravity is, of course, the Grand description. But the reconstruction, if you would know the microscopic matrices, you can do the reconstruction. And you only need one instance of the microscopic matrices. Of course, the reason why we're excited about this the recent developments is that replica wormholes may provide a crucial insight into how quantum field theory breaks down inside of the island, for example, and into possible mechanisms for information transfer to the exterior, but I don't have concrete things to say about that. Thank you. Time for questions.
Are there further questions?
I just wanted to understand, in the earlier part of the talk when you introduced the quantum error correction and recovery operator, this wasn't really special to black holes, right? If I threw a diary into a pile of burning coals and they scrambled it well enough, all of this would also apply, right?
Right. So it's obviously a very idealized situation where the person having the quantum computer would know exactly what the microscopic time evolution looks like. And essentially would have to be able to reconstruct that
sure.
particular operator.
But my question is, because you called it the interior operator, or the but in the case of the piece of coal, we wouldn't assume that it describes the interior of anything, right?
Okay, if the piece of coal, if the burning of the piece of coal produces indeed a random embedding of the initial state of the piece of coal, and the radiation coming from the piece of coal, if it's a purely ergodic embedding, and then in that case there would be an interior of the piece of coal. The piece of coal would be effectively be a black hole.
So I can fall onto a piece of coal and feel nothing?
That's not the piece of coal.
It's not a piece. The piece of coal is not doing this ergodic. It's not doing the ergodic scrambling. So the ergodic scrambling is the thing that's essential about black holes.
But surely I can build an object like a piece of coal that, if I give it enough time, can achieve ergodic scrambling? Are you claiming that when I... Sorry, we'll talk later. are you claiming that makes it have a traversable surface that I can fall through? Or I'm trying to understand what the criterion is.
So the criterion, obviously it should be a macroscopic object. If the macroscopic object is basically doing ergodic mixing of the initials, a large initial Hilbert space into a large final Hilbert space, that's the only operational definition that currently that we have of black holes. If you look at the SYK model, that's the essential ingredient of the SYK model, is that it's doing this kind of scrambling. So that's the definition. So a scrambling coal would have the same.
I mean, many body systems will scramble. It's just there's different like scrambling time, and so usually we thought that there is a dual geometry because there is a particular way the black hole scrambles, which is very fast.
And so. Time didn't enter into the formula, which is why I was asking.
Yeah. So
okay.
I agree
no. The time does enter into the formulas in the sense that indeed you can only do the reconstruction. This is one of my first slides. When you're after the scrambling time.
No,
so indeed...
But that didn't have to happen fast. That could have happened, you could have any amount of time you wanted until that condition is satisfied. And it seems to me that you're claiming that in that case, you can fall through a piece of coal.
I'm not claiming that one can fall through it. Right now, again, there's a question. All right? I have a question, and I'm not claiming that one can fall in. What I'm claiming is that you can reconstruct operators in the interior. That doesn't tell you that you can fall in. The statement that I was making earlier about the reconstruction of the operator again, if you have scrambling dynamics and you indeed go through the whole page evolution, then for sure you can reconstruct operators on the initial Hilbert space. Indeed, it's a more subtle question if you can construct operators that really, at a given moment in time, can follow the time evolution inside of a black hole. That part, I have not claimed to have given an answer to that.
So I ask you the same question I asked you 7 years ago. How do you decide which states are in the code subspace, and what do you think happens in the ones that aren't?
I think we're currently learning more about the distinction between what sits inside the code subspace and what does not. Namely, my definition of the code subspace is indeed where this inequality is satisfied, meaning that you gave it a name, the inequality. And if the code...
There are lots of subspaces which are small enough that that inequality is true, right?
Correct.
It's nonlinear if you just say it should work for any of those subspaces, right?
No, what my perspective is the following, is that for any of those code subspaces, I can reconstruct a semi-classical interior, and indeed, in that respect, the requirement that a black hole is geometry is part of it. If you want to go beyond that, then the reconstruction breaks down, and this is precisely when the different saddle points in the gravitational path integral start competing. So if the code subspace gets too big, then the Boltzmann weights of the statistical weights of the two recontractions, I call them, become comparable, and then you're going to get a sum of saddle points that no longer has a single semi-classical.
But I mean, usually what we would say in quantum error correction is that if you're in the orthogonal complement of the code subspace, then the recovery fails. And so in this language, in this situation, that sounds like firewall. That's why I'm asking.
Correct. Okay, so fine. Okay, let me briefly go here then.
Yeah.
So indeed what happens, if you go outside of the code subspace, or indeed if you go into the regime where the code subspace becomes too big, then you're going to, your recovery is no longer going to satisfy the correct properties.
Yeah.
So I wrote down this property of the recovery operator that basically it multiplies to a delta function. That thing gives rise to the first just rule that the recovery of the operators, the product of the recovery operators is the recovery of the product. But you're going to get an error.
Yeah.
One of the funny things about the error, by the way, it looks like an expectation value with an inverse temperature. So this is the thing, this is a computation you can do, because basically these things live in a thermal bath, and basically the error doesn't see the thermal bath. So therefore, you get this funny inverse Boltzmann factor. And it's actually tempting to apply this relationship. This is, you can compute this again from the Gaussian rules, to write down this relationship for operators that are basically embedded in the thermal field double. So they already know about their thermal surrounding. And then diagrammatically or schematically, this rule indeed looks very similar to the pictures that are in the recent papers, that the product, this particular product, gives rise to something that you would need count as gluing these two things together. But then there's an extra contribution, which is this one, where basically the replica wormhole doesn't appear. It's absent. And this is indeed where quantum field theory breaks down, where classical geometry breaks down, because there's another saddle point.
Hi. So it seems to be this analysis is something pretty close to what I did in a large areas black hole case. Let me make a couple of comments about even including questions. One is that if it's a small black hole, energetics works in a different way, and you can't reconstruct purely from radiation, because you have to have energy conservation already at the level of black hole. That's just a comment.
Mm-hmm.
Because this analysis, by the way, I did it for large areas black hole case, exactly the same analysis, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yes. And about interior, if you have a piece of core or something, in order to say that this is a space-time, you have to have this random distribution of the energies into all low energy species, everything. And that happens when a horizon or something recede to the stretched horizon, that intrinsic temperature goes like a string scale. Then you have a string dynamics, and it's universal throughout all the low energy species. That's needed to claim that that's a space-time, because you need this for all low energy quantum field. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. And that's not the case if the material surface is in front of the Schwarzschild horizon. Those are something I also discussed. And then for the Dan's question, it's true that technically, by doing this analysis, you're only showing the existence of the operator, which, right? I mean, I totally agree.
Right.
And I don't really know explicitly at the, why those are the right operators to discuss, you know, predictions at the level of classical and so on, right?
Obviously,
it must be classicalization and so on. But one thing you can say is that this physics captured at the exponential precision, this physics of these this set of operators, is universal throughout all C, because in any C, you can construct these operators. So it's insensitive to the detail of black hole microstates. So that's at least good sign that this kind of physics is universal throughout the black hole microstates. But that's not enough, of course. Yeah, okay. I know it.
Okay. I have a question about the situation with Alice and Bob and Charlie.
Okay.
And I guess you have the radiation system and the CFT, and well, it's not too specific to this example, but it's related. So you have the radiation system and the CFT, and Charlie can act on the radiation system to recover the state of Alice and Bob.
Right.
It's like the logical state.
Right.
And then Charlie can manipulate that, and then if I understand right, Charlie creates a new copy of the CFT. He embeds
right.
that logical state
you
into a new copy of the CFT
well,
and the radiation.
Yesterday.
Is that somehow like too extreme?
Obviously, no, right. So
it feels like almost like you want Charlie just to act in the radiation, not to, and to leave the CFT alone, rather than.
No, so let me be more specific. So here, this is a virtual stage. So this thing is these things are not really there. It's halfway. This is the PETS map. So I'm cutting the PETS map into half, and there's a virtual stage in between. And you mentioned it in your talk actually yesterday, that indeed there is, clearly the radiation is entangled with the interior of the black hole. And basically what Charlie needs to do is he needs to isolate that entanglement in order to be able to access the quantum information that sits inside the black hole. So that's what happens in this intermediate stage. And actually, you in your talk yesterday, you mentioned the
I'm
same
thing.
I'm
curious about the last stage, though. It seems like after
so
Charlie...
So the last stage, basically, he projects this thing back onto a thermal field double state. And projecting those two back onto a thermal field double state removes those two things again, and then it restates the original geometry, which is the one up there. But now he has acted with an operator. So this is just a cartoon for an interior operator inside the island. And the PETS map is doing this intermediate stage.
Okay, let's thank Herman.